Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. In the news, WWE and AEW arena battles. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, SmackDown doing the basics that Dynamite can't seem to find. And in Vader Club, an unusual choice, I'll have him defended, Don Fry versus Brian Johnson from New Japan Pro Wrestling, October 18, 2000, New Japan Get It Right, Black versus G Eggs. I'm Jeff Hawkins, he's Chris Novembrino, and Chris, I've had a week.
So have I.
Well, mine started on Monday with both my credit cards being stolen. And I'm at the gym and I get a text. Hey, did you spend $2,900 at Costco? No, I did not. I am here at the gym. And I'm like, what is going on? So I go, just for craps and giggles, I lock my other credit card. Just to be sure, and just in the nick of time, because apparently second stop after $2,800 or $2,900 worth of Costco was $400 at either Dollar General or Dollar Tree. And I'm like, how are you spending $400 at those types of places? But I don't know, Chris, maybe I'm old fashioned, but my first instinct, if I see a credit card on the ground that's not mine, is not to spend it. But I don't know how it was lost or it might have been stolen out of my locker at the gym too. So, but 75 hours of work as well. I am, and then if you want to hear me rant and be angry, go listen to the Dynamite show on Fight Game on Wednesday after that Dynamite, because I was in no mood to take anybody's crap today. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. So, but you did say credit, not debit card, right?
Luckily, the debit was not taken.
Right,
still
right. No. So it's like, okay, so this is where it gets into a weird area for me, in the sense that, like, one of the beauties of the credit card is that it's not actually your money, it's your debt. So, like, in a way, when someone steals my credit card, not that I want someone to steal my credit card, not that I like having to call the credit card company and deal with the credit card company and reconcile all of these things. But when this occurs, I'm not, in a way, I don't feel like, I don't perceive theft in the same way that if someone had taken my debit card, because it's now straight up out of my account. It is literally money I do not have at this point.
Okay.
It's absent and gone.
But the only reason you feel that way is because of the credit card regulations.
They stole somebody else's money.
Well, but that they're not making you pay for it.
Right.
But it's still, but I mean, they could if they wanted to. It's still your card.
They could. They could. But they don't, and that is
not always. But you never know, and that always worried me. Where it's like, because
right, sure.
Because one of the other things that was that apparently there were three things taken from my wallet: my two credit cards and my Costco card. So if they used my Costco card to then charge, and then well, Mr. Hawkins, it says that Costco says that you're the one. It was your membership being used, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, I don't want to be on the hook for $3,000 that I didn't spend.
This is still legitimately interesting that they elected to leave the debit card as though that they actually did make this point of delineation that we're discussing right now.
I think it's probably more of a drop than a steal. Because I was trying to think of where I would have dropped it.
Got it.
Might have just fallen out or something to that effect. But it's still one of those things where it's like, yeah, because I also had cash attached to my wallet that wasn't taken. So I don't think it was theft, but it was definitely, I'm trying to figure out where, because I only used the damn thing once all weekend, and it was at the grocery store, and then I put it back. But I would think the grocery store would have, if it was there, hey, lost and found. They put it there, they sent whatever. Nope. I don't know. It's just been a week. So let's, anything to add? Anything you want to bring up from your week?
Any number of things. A quick one. Earlier this week, I was cleaning the house, right? I had the vacuum going. And I had this 1-2 bang bang moment where all of a sudden, like, the vacuum's not working. You know, it was like, oh, I'm not getting much drag. And I, like, looked down. The vacuum has sucked in the cord, but my vacuum is so powerful that it has nearly destroyed the cord, almost killing me in a matter of seconds. Like, I, like, turn this thing off. I pull the cord out. I'm like, holy shit, I almost just died. Like, damn. Wow.
I kind of want to see that right up in the paper, though.
This is
man electrocutes himself vacuuming.
And I'm normally very good about, you know, keeping the cord over my shoulder or whatever, but, like, this is a tangle-free Bissell. It's very powerful. And, yeah, I mean, it almost sheared the cord in half, which certainly would have sent me for a ride if it had been there for, like, not a few more seconds.
Boy, yeah, powerful vacuums are scary because my mom got my brother and I both Dysons for Christmas about 10 years ago. Those things will, like metal things on your floor, so they'll just suck them right up. I'm just like, well, I hope, like, I don't, thank God I don't have a cat. You know?
No. I love this because it's like, I mean, people are always curious about how the seven cats in the house thing's working out, and the answer is honestly fine. I have multiple litter boxes, but a big part of the system of, you know, just keeping the house orderly, because it doesn't look like there's seven cats in the house, except when obviously multiple cats are all out at once. But, like, I vacuum the carpet in here, you know, every other day or whatever, and I get a good solid bag on this Bissell. But you need a good powerful vacuum cleaner in order to do that. But so now I'm gonna have to go to a vacuum repairman, and I am going to tell him to put a better cord on that, because I do not want to die. Well, I don't want to die
yet.
We all have to die sometime, and I actually think it'd be way worse to live forever. But I do not want to go out like a chump, killed by his own vacuum cleaner as he's cleaning his house.
See, I'm convinced I'm going out like a chump, like doing something like nice for somebody, or I trip and fall during it. It's like, oh, he fell into a meat grinder helping the poor. Something like that. It's like, okay, great. Like,
I just ask, Lord, please let me die badass.
To the news, AEW announced some of the schedule for the early part of 2025, latter part of 2024, including Revolution at Crypto.com Arena, which I'll circle back to. But AEW is running three straight nights at the Hammerstein. They'll do Final Battle on December 20th, Collision on the 21st, and a taped Dynamite on the 22nd. There are moves being made to transition to running some smaller buildings. Apparently their lighting rig was such that it was too heavy and big to fit into a lot of smaller facilities, and they're retooling it to make that possible. I think this is smart because they can't fill bigger arenas, but Crypto.com is an interesting choice for the Los Angeles area.
Oh, heck yeah, it is.
Mostly because Raw has evacuated. That tends to be the WWE arena in favor of a new one. I'll get to that in a moment. I actually think it's smarter, and I'll tell you why. Because Inglewood is hard to get to from any part of LA other than Inglewood. And that's where the Kia Forum is. That's where the new Intuit Dome is. That's where SoFi is. It's just a beast to get to. Crypto, fairly easy, because it's in the middle of downtown. You can take public transit fairly easy on a Sunday to get downtown. You take the red line to the blue line spot. First stop is the former Staples, Crypto, whatever. I don't know if it's going to sell out because it's a colder product right now, but it's far more accessible to the LA audience. I think that's it's an interesting move to me. I don't know how smart it is at this point in time because, look, I think they should play Ontario still, which is about 90 minutes outside of Los Angeles, and that's kind of the what they call the Bucks home territory. That's also the arena where, like, the Bullet Club met up with WWE that one time. It's a smaller arena. It's for minor league hockey and stuff. It probably will serve their purposes, but they still want to run the big four at big arenas. So more power to them. Any thoughts generally on any of this?
Yeah, I do. So I will always think that crypto.com is just like a pets.com sort of name that will always be inherently funny as we look back on it with the benefit of time and hindsight. But to build off of this in a more serious way, I think that AEW would do well in studying the way that people actually move through all the different cities that they want to run a little bit closer. For example, you brought up LA and what's more accessible and what's easier to get to. I would do the same thing with Dallas. You remember the K. Bailey Hutchinson Center. That was a lovely mid-sized venue to run that is much more accessible, or the American Airlines Center, much more accessible than, let's say, the Jerry Jones Bowl. And there are probably any number of larger venues that are not as accessible as a mid-sized one that is a more affordable evening. And I think that if AEW wants to get attendance up, what they need to do is move into a model of a fun, affordable evening, unlike the big guy. And they have to realize that they are the value-priced alternative to the bigger show. I don't think they like that. I don't think they want to hear that. I don't think that's what the fans want to hear. But I think that taking some pages out of TNA's playbook from 10, 15 years ago when they were the mid-sized competitor to WWE, the alternative, the Pepsi to the Coke, that's what you got to work with here.
Yeah, my fear is that this getting to do smaller buildings, meaning they're going to do more fun-style buildings, and I don't think that's the problem. Like, there's a lot of talk like that Tony really has put on his, you know, when he started AEW, he wanted to do a lot more things like Nitro at Club Whatever with the pool in the middle and more like non-traditional venues. I think if you're going to cement your place as a postmodern ironic wrestling company, that's the way to go. I think you just want to be seen as popular, and I think smaller buildings will do that for you.
Right. I think so. I think you want the buildings to seem like fun and alive. What you want to come across on
cool. You want to be seen as cool.
The ECW mid-90s energy, the NXT mid-2010s energy, a small, intimate, cool place where the cool kids are, all the cool kids in wrestling fandom, and we're like, you could hang out and maybe make some friends and stuff. It's not so big that you're just standing there and watching a show like with the big guy.
As expected, it was made official that the Raw Netflix premiere will take place January 6th in Inglewood, California at the Intuit Dome. They put tickets on sale and it sold out in 15 minutes, but then they unsold out as they put more tickets on sale. Ticket prices were very high. I can vouch for that, as the cheap seats in the very tippy top of the arena were selling for $230. They're advertising John Cena, Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Liv Morgan, Gunther, and Bianca Belair, amongst others, but they are not advertising The Rock. It will air live on both coasts, so 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Oh, that's going to make it for a hellish commute, kids. There will also be a Travis Scott concert taking place. Intuit is the nice shiny toy of Steve Ballmer, the owner of the L.A. Clippers. I have some friends who are Clipper season ticket holder fans. They're working out the kinks. They really like the arena a lot, but unless I'm getting comped, ain't no way in hell I'm going down there. But $230.
This is what I'm talking about raw. The affordable alternative. I will always recall the time I went to TNA lockdown out in it wasn't Garland. Where was it? It was in a smaller town, like not Dallas or not Fort Worth, but one of those in between towns. Was it maybe Euless? Bedford? Maybe Hearst? But like, it was like one of those places. And I saw TNA Lockdown. I'm sure someone could look it up. And it was $20. It was $20 to go and see TNA Lockdown. We had good seats. I think. AEW, you know, they need to make the evening $40-$50, and WWE is making it really easy for them to find a nice little niche where you're under $100 by a considerable margin for the whole family.
It's the Disney Universal thing for theme parks, both out here and in Florida. Disney charges, I mean, you have to take out a second mortgage to take your kids to Disneyland out here. And Universal, when I was working there, decided that we're just as good as Disney, so we'll put our prices that way too. You'll hear Dave talk about this a lot with pay-per-views, where it's like, well, if they make the pay-per-views cheaper, they won't be seen as special as if they're expensive. But $230 for four people. Like, I went to TNA Bound for Glory when it was in Irvine. It was a fun time. It was a small building. It was fun. It was full. Yeah.
Here's a fun thought experiment, Jeff. What if AEW took Uncle Dave's advice and just pegged their ticket prices exactly to WWE's? How would that go for them?
They'd have 100 people in Dynamite.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So this conversation sort of...
Well, his was more about UFC, for, you know, a hot product versus AEW, which is not.
Well, I know, but I think, you know, look, you just have to be realistic with the level of heat you've got. Just saying, I'm charging $1,000 per ticket does not... That's not how you create demand, right? You're able to set price based on demand. You don't set demand based on price.
The Mike Tyson fight was watched by 108 million viewers. 78 million watched the fight live.
That was a fine piece of professional wrestling is what that was.
Yeah. Mm. I didn't think it'd be that popular, but I thought the NFL would be the thing that would strain the streaming, but no.
That they managed to get me. Like, I thought Tyson was going to level this guy, and now obviously in the postmortem he was pulling punches and absolutely nerfing himself to just get to a stalemate. And I should have seen that coming, but they snookered me. I thought he was going to level Jake Paul.
Did you? Okay.
They did that. You know, I've seen comparisons to him just boxing 2-3 years ago against Roy Jones, where he's like throwing much, much stiffer punches and everything. Yeah. I mean, it's very clear. He did not go all out on Jake Paul. I wouldn't even say he went half out on Jake Paul.
Linda McMahon nominated for Department of Education. She came in second for the commerce contest. Thing is, so many people are just like, what does she know about education?
Not much, but I mean, compared to everyone else who's getting hired for these jobs, she's right in the middle of the pack.
This is what cabinet positions are. They're administrative positions to reward your friends. It's not like Pete Buttigieg knows a lot about transportation. But I'll tell you this, I read a position. She has an editorial in Politico or The Hill. I forget which one it was about. expanding Pell Grants to rural professionals so that they could then, it was interesting. She knows something. She knows enough to be dangerous, and it's mostly just to hire and fire the people who are going to do the actual dirty work. That's the thing that people don't get about these positions. They're she's going to be the public face, and then she's going to hire the people to do the policy stuff for the most part. And she runs a think tank. She has a Rolodex of people. She can do that. But actually, I got reached out for from a friend who works in think tank world, who said shockingly competent when it came to her at the Small Business Administration. So take that for what you will, Chris. But
I mean, look, I think she's a stronger pick than Matt Gaetz was.
Oh, yes. I'm a stronger pick than Matt Gaetz was. NXT averaged 672,000. I'm not even a lawyer. NXT averaged 672,000 viewers, scored a 0.19 amongst 18 to 49-year-olds. Both are up from the previous week. Total audiences nearly 6.5% bigger than November 12th. The demo was up almost 19%. It was the show's biggest audience since October 22nd, best rating since October 8th. AEW 640,000, but 0.20 in the demo. Draw. That's what I figure here, but that's, man, I NXT is averaging more viewers. That's something to me, but I don't know. We'll talk about why AEW is kind of struggling in a bit, but that seems to be.
I just continue to believe that the numbers and the long-term performance of the numbers are not some sort of disconnection from the quality of the product. I've actually seen sort of loosely. Now, as we approach year's end, there's a sudden realization that AEW's had kind of a down year narratively.
Yeah, where have you all been?
I know. Now, they've all arrived, Jeffrey.
And I know.
They will act like they have discovered new untrodden soil. Like British settlers arriving on native land, they'll act like they've discovered something.
We're that team
when they've actually been people who've been living here all along.
We're that team in The Amazing Race that has just an absurd time, and we're just waiting at the finish line for everybody else to come up. Yeah. Variety announced that CM Punk would be joining the cast of Revival, a televised horror series that will air on Sci-Fi. I've watched CM Punk act. He acts like CM Punk. Let's move on. I was going to tell you something about the NXT thing. It actually grew in viewership with it actually increasing during the main event, as opposed to other wrestling programs that kind of die as they go. Chase U was over. Well, and now it's dead, I think. I don't know. It's sad.
You know the problem with CM Punk and acting?
What?
They already wrote the Negan character, and he's already been casted.
Yeah, that's true. And he's also a better actor, probably.
Oh, yeah. No, the guy who plays Negan's a much better actor than CM Punk.
Yes. WWID is doing some interesting things. They are plugging themselves on social media that someone is going to be signed by this program at various indie shows, and they made a very interesting move this past week where it was revealed that Kylie Rae now has a WWID deal. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to sign her, but it does mean she's on their radar. She's getting some extra scratch, which is nice.
It means she's getting money. That's great.
It means she's getting some money. I don't expect them ever to bring her in. Except maybe for like they did on Main Event, where she did preliminary stuff.
I could see her on NXT doing some sort of NXT guest appearance cameo-y thing.
Maybe, but not as a name necessarily. Because I mean, she's 32. She's not the type they're gonna bring in for that system. But I could see them bringing her in to be like the hand to lead somebody in through a match for like one of these Carmen Petrovich types or something to that effect. Yes.
Yeah.
But it kind of blows your mind, doesn't it, that Kylie Rae was going to be the anchor along with, or at least the foundation with Britt Baker of the AEW women's division. And now she kind of has a developmental deal with WWE in some ways. I'm always, the what ifs are fascinating to me.
Looking back, Jeffrey, you might say that the plan from 5 years ago for AEW has really fallen to pieces in a clear and decisive way. Cody Rhodes was going to be a vice president of this company, has since left and has gone on to become the anchor of the competition after your fan base rejected him, saw nothing in him, and only wanted him to turn heel. The other vice presidents that you had, one of them is injured and sort of like in kind of limited use status of his career at this point. The Young Bucks never quite got to that next level like I think a lot of people would hope for. Britt Baker. You gave a Goldberg push.
I'm gonna make a prediction. Britt Baker is gonna be under a WWE deal sometime in the next year.
Yeah, but you have Britt Baker and Chelsea Green, and arguably they're kind of both in the same place in terms of pecking order in their companies, with Chelsea Green being better utilized on a regular basis than Britt is.
I've told you that story, though, right?
What?
Canyon Seaman was at, I think it's Shine in New Orleans, and he's sitting in front of me. And Chelsea Green and Britt Baker are a tag team, and he thought they were twins. He wanted to, well, you know, Eddie, I think he said something effective, well, we can sign one of them. And they signed Chelsea Green before then cutting her and then bringing her back. But yeah, it's always interesting when you bring up Britt Baker and Chelsea Green for me, because I was sitting right behind him when he was scouting them for NXT.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot of things. And then, as I was saying, Jade Cargill getting a Goldberg-like push only to leave the company. There's a lot of things from this initial five-year arc. And Jericho. Has Jericho been a net positive for this company? Boy, that is a debate that will go 10,000 pages until it is shut down by moderators.
I will not engage in it because I don't know.
Right. That's what I mean. It's one of those debates that I could just imagine bloodshed being happening on a message board.
Oh, and Jericho would put a burner just to...
Right, yes. He'd play both sides.
Yes, he would, probably. Now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, we will start with Full Gear, which starts in about 10 minutes. So this will be a preview / ranting about all things Dynamite. Because, God, that show. If you are still buying Full Gear, congratulations. You're one of the sickos.
They've been horrible at go home shows all year.
Yes.
Like this has been a year of garbage go home shows, but
this one took the cake.
They talk people out of the effing building in a way that it's just stunning. It's like, I'm right here at the finish line, buddy. Am I buying this or not? Here's a stinker of a 2 hours where you're going to wish you got a refund on your time. Boy, can't wait to buy the pay-per-view for $60, you said?
Yeah, things were so bad that they advertised the stars of CMLL, and then they didn't have time for that segment. Probably because Jericho and Ishii were slow motion chasing through the building. But we'll get to that. Well, no, we won't, because it's not on this show, and I don't care about it. So let's go to it. In the pre-show, three matches. And the guy who cut the best promo on the show is the first match. Big Boom AJ with Big Justice versus QT Marshall.
If that was the best promo on the show, let's be really clear. That promo was shit. It was like reading the first paragraph on Costco Guy's Wikipedia page.
I thought Big Boom AJ did okay. He was excited. He said what he was going to do. He said the name of the card.
He's got serial killer eyes, Jeff.
He does.
Eyes are dead. His kids' eyes are dead.
Kids' eyes are dead. The Rizzler is going to be the special guest timekeeper. Look, they should have played the Tonight Show segment, too, on here. They should have gotten permission for that, because that would have made it seem a lot bigger. But look, he got his catchphrase in, he said what he was going to do, and he said he was going to fight, and he was excited, which gets more than I can say about these.
That face didn't move at all. These people are replicants, let's be real. They're replicants.
This guy looked like The Rock compared to Kyle O'Reilly, so let's... I mean, he...
It was like watching an advertisement. It wasn't a wrestling
curve. That's all a promo is.
Oh, no, no, no. I, A promo is supposed to be an advertisement in disguise. What's supposed to happen is something that's consistent with the storyline that is actually functioning as an advertisement for buying the pay-per-view. What I shouldn't be doing is being like, hello, Jeffrey, consumer out there. Guess what's coming up this weekend? Me, Chris, the Novster, will be going.
This show would be amazing.
Hello, listener. Are you listening to podcasts right now? Well, why not give Shake Them Ropes a subscription? You can listen to me, Chris, the Novster, Novembrino, and Jeffrey, Big Hawk, Kaka Hawkins, every single week on your podcast feed by subscribing to the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Get it in your podcatcher. Nerd,
yes.
That's my catchphrase. It's my catchphrase. I'll tell you one thing, though.
Look, Big Boom AJ is winning this match, and QT is going to make him look good doing it.
I want Big Boom to get hit with steel chairs multiple times, but
won't. No, I got a better idea. No, if this leads into the pay-per-view with the Death Riders coming out and destroying Big Boom AJ, that'd be something.
If they wreck the Rizzler. Yes. If Marina stretches the Rizzler.
Marina puts the Rizzler in a moodle lock.
Get JR on the call. The Rizzler's a goddamn child, you monsters.
I need Big Justice to go up for a Claudio uppercut of some kind.
He's a damn child.
We're not going to top that. Deonna Purrazzo versus Anna Jay. All right. I guess they're going to put out this Vendetta stable or something like that, because it's Deonna and Taya Valkyrie are a crew called the Vendetta. So maybe Anna Jay will get a win and they get beat down, or she gets beat down afterwards. I don't know. I don't know why this is on here, but it's on here. What happened to Collision? What happened to Serena Deeb versus Britt Baker that they had set up and then didn't say anything about? I don't think it's Collision even on tonight. I don't know.
No, but I'm literally begging this company to edit your pay-per-views down to the matches that actually matter and the feuds that actually matter. Stop just giving people paydays.
Jam band. Buddy Matthews versus Dante Martin versus Commander versus the Beast Mortis to finish up this pre-show in a, my God, that's a Rampage special.
I'm going to go the Beast Mortos.
Yeah, Beast is getting a minor push. I'm going with that. And now into the main card, which starts with the scintillating feud of MJF versus Roderick Strong. My God, Adam Cole comes out there. And the narrative emotional crutch is Kyle O'Reilly giving this long, dull ass, we've been friends for a long time promo, followed up later by Roddy, who MJF says, I wish your mother had shot you. And Roddy knows how to be a heel. He knows how to be angry, at least. Oh, I see what you're doing. You're trying to get in my head and make me angry like elementary school. I'm going to have a match with you later, MJF, who, by the way, drives to a random parking lot where some dude is hanging out and just throws quarters. I don't know what
That was to get him out of the camera shot, but that didn't make sense.
No, because there was nothing there for him to be sitting in front of to be begging. Right. He was just sitting in a freaking parking lot with a sign. I hate everything about this feud. I hate Adam Cole. I hate Roderick Strong.
Yes, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Matt Taven, Kyle O'Reilly, Mike Bennett. These five guys don't even have one person's charisma. When all combined, you can put a leather jacket on Adam Cole. You can give him story time with Adam Cole, Bebe, and like a sing-along catchphrase. And then once all of that crap stops,
he's boring.
He's boring as shit. And it's Roderick Strong, watching his promo, I was flummoxed. What I was watching, was he being ironic? Was he being disingenuous? Was he actually angry? Does he actually want to get his hands on MJF? And then watching Matt Taven and Mike Bennett behind them, behind him, again, left me begging more questions. Like, do these guys care? Do they actually want MJF? What is actually happening between Adam Cole and Roderick Strong? And more importantly, why do I care? Because currently I don't. And then out comes Kyle O'Reilly from the conglomeration. And I don't care to see a reunion of three quarters of the Undisputed Era in above average NXT faction from years past.
Roddy Strong just got turned on Kyle O'Reilly.
Right.
With Taven and Ben. These guys were all more interesting as devils under masks. This is just bad. Everything about it. Who do you think wins? And I hope it's MJF.
Right. I think it's MJ, like it's MJF because Cole somehow costs Roddy the match.
Yes. And then, oh God, help us.
I hate this.
I hate it.
I have to say, Roderick Strong, I'm less checked out on than Adam Cole.
Yes.
I don't care. Like, Roddy can still have good matches.
Adam Cole has one promo and one match right now.
Right.
And they
played Strong's match is just better. Strong is the better match between the two of them.
Yes, I agree. Jay White versus Hangman Adam Page, which is another feud that is suffering because, number one, Jay White never changes his emotional timbre at all. He's always, and he's still kind of a heel. He's a mustache twirler who's cutting a babyface promo. And also, I think this is mostly fandom that has ruined this for me, but Hangman Adam Page is not doing a redemption story in the middle of this. Stop it. There's tons of people who think, well, maybe here's where Adam Page becomes heroic again. He's a heel. Stop this. Stop
this
imaginary thing.
Why would you even want that? Why, beyond imagining it, why would you want that? Why would you want that story to go to the redemption arc right now when he hasn't even reached the depths of being a piece of garbage? We have not gotten to we haven't gotten to breaking his own kids' hearts or anything.
No,
right?
No,
like
no.
That's the whole point. Is it, when you turn someone bad, go all the way, especially if you're talking about doing this. It's like, well, no, we need to no reason turn him back and have him on a redemption arc. A redemption arc to where, friend?
Exactly. For the tag team titles, Private Party versus the Outrunners versus Kings of the Black Throne versus the Acclaimed. I'll go first on this one. I think Private Party is retaining. I think the Outrunners should probably give. I think there's a chance they might because this feels like, at least that the Outrunners are going to get a run. Tony seems to like them. They've been getting pushed lately on Collision. But I think a lot of this is just going to be the narrative of Max Caster finally turning on Anthony Bowens and whatnot. And then, by the way, this week, Private Party, back to being babyfaces. Good for them. It's a four-way. It's going to be a schmoz. I think Private Party retains.
Private Party retains. I'm moderately interested in a Max Caster solo push, but we'll see.
For the AEW TBS Championship, Mercedes Moné with Camille versus Chris Statlander, which they built with a babyface versus babyface match between Statlander and Hikaru Shida that had the crowd split on who to cheer for. What?
What about the end segment when Moné comes down and creates a sympathy spot for Camille, who has to go in with one arm completely outnumbered and get injured? What are we doing with these emotional notes? Or do we not understand?
We don't understand the emotional notes.
Why we do anything, right?
See, that's supposed to make her more of a heel for sending Camille in there, who's only been loyal to Mercedes at this point by trying to hit people with cars and stuff. I think they've given up on Camille, which is
right.
Sad.
We don't. I think that's sad too. It's like, yeah, right. We've nowhere near established that we respect, we have a grudging respect for Camille's loyalty or anything like that. If anything, you're turning her into a Virgil-like figure, which is the exact wrong move to do with someone like Camille.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love Camille and Statlander to team up and just murder death this entire division, but that's me. Swerve Strickland versus Bobby Lashley? I don't know, given the WWE rules of booking that they seem to have stolen, would say that Swerve wins this, but I think Bobby Lashley has to kill him. Right?
I do, too. I think Lashley wins, but I think there's interference.
Yeah, there's going to be interference. There's going to be interference. MVP
or actually, maybe the new member, the fourth member, like a Leo Rush, comes out.
Could be. Yeah. Strickland has a dislocated shoulder, I believe. So maybe this will be quick and it won't be drawn out. We'll see. And another baffling program for the TNT title. Jack Perry, your champion, versus the felony committing, but yet can't carry through with it, Daniel Garcia. We have once again screwed up. I almost dropped an F-bomb there. Garcia, to the point where he's a geek. He's weak. You kidnap Jack Perry. You tie him
up. The commentators kidnapped Jack Perry, which is insane.
And then you have him. I was hoping they'd Reservoir Dogs him in the chair, you know, put on, you know, Stuck in the Middle with You, do a little dance, brain him with a tire iron. No. Daniel Garcia starts to get remorse after driving him on the top of a car to this place, and then gives the weakest shots with his tire iron to that bus, doesn't even break the headlight or dent the hood, and then runs away like a bitch.
And this is to set us up for a match. Like, he's scared to hit Jack Perry here. Boy, I can't wait to see him in a match.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's also the flip side of this Moxley feud, where Perry is being this obtuse figure who's spouting, you know, fortune cookie crap in hopes of Daniel Garcia then violating his one rule, you know, like Batman and Joker, but neither of these guys are interesting enough to be Batman and the Joker. This sucks.
Oh no, I know, and the idea that he's making these like Sean O'Hare like hypocrisy arguments to Garcia that are disingenuous. They're not valid arguments. This started off with Jack Perry trying to take out people, and all they did was turn the tables on his ass. They're playing the game by his rules, which is what Daddy Magic should be saying to Garcia.
Yeah,
I don't actually agree with Daddy Magic being involved in this as a premise, but if you're going to go this route, then we should see essentially Daddy Magic toughening up Garcia and slapping him in the face and being like, I need you to be a man now. I need Daniel. I've been your big brother here for the last few years. I need you to step up now. I'm on commentary and I'm watching you and I'm ready to watch you shine, and you need to go. This man is a coward. Like, he hit him. He slaps you know, Perry. And then he makes Garcia hit him, basically forcing Garcia to toughen up in advance of this match. That builds intrigue for the match. Going again to a promo is not just an advertisement, where Daniel Garcia goes, I will see you and also all the viewers at home on Saturday night at the Intuit Dome or wherever the hell we are. Like, you know, you actually have to make it go like, oh man, I can't wait to see what happens next. I need to catch this. And I thought that Daddy Magic wasn't used well in this. And then this left me not caring to see. I don't care if Garcia beats Jack Perry, because apparently he doesn't have the nuts to pull the trigger.
There's just no pure baby faces either. But at the same time, all this started, it reminds me, last year around this time with the Continental Classic tournament where Daniel Garcia got one win. Oh, here comes the push. And he eventually re-signs with AEW to do this crap. I'm whatever. Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher. It'll be a good match. Mark Davis is turning eventually. So that Aussie Open.
Well, they basically already set that up with Mark Davis getting left by Will Ospreay. Like, I think
hate this.
I hate this, and I hate this being so transparent.
It's a multi-man match. Sometimes things happen, but it's going to be turned into, oh, you hit me with your finisher, and screw off. I hope it doesn't happen during this match, because I think this is going to be one of those. Wrestling Observer subscriber Meltzer spreadsheet Joe Lanza notebook 5-star specials if you keep Don Callis and Mark Davis away from this. So I assume they're gonna do this like maybe on Dynamite or after the match. But
man, nobody cares about Mark Davis as a character in this story one way or another. The only person who cares about having Mark Davis in this story is Will Ospreay, and I get it. It's great to get your friend some work, but this is not great work that you're getting your friend.
Announced on Thursday on Twitter, because we didn't do any building of this card on the pay-per-view or even announce the lineup, Konosuke Takeshita, your champion, your AEW International champion, versus Ricochet. Hey, how about that? I'd say Takeshita wins.
How can you say that, Jeff? I mean, I was told a few months ago that when AEW got Ricochet, they knew how to use him correctly. Yeah. And it would be incorrect to have him dropping to Konosuke Takeshita, a guy that they're not really necessarily doing a whole hell of a lot with right now. That's why that seems foolhardy. I'm going to go with Takeshita.
And then in your main event... Get ready for the rant.
This is white hot Jeffrey Hawkins.
John Moxley versus Orange Cassidy for the AEW World Championship. Built upon by Orange Cassidy last week telling John Moxley, we're going to wrestle. And I was like, okay, what is this about? And it turns out we're going to wrestle instead of fight. And so Orange Cassidy tells the conglomeration, stay in the back, even though everybody knows the 5-on-1 beatdown's coming. And here comes the 5-on-1 beatdown. They all come out after a banana peel small package by Orange Cassidy on Wheeler Yuta. Hey, how about that? We get the 5-on-1 beatdown where not only have they tied him up, but they keep shoving him into Marina. But... Orange Cassidy will not fight back. He will do his ironic shin kicks in a 5-on-1 beatdown. Because not only does he not want to fight, he only wants to wrestle. And so Moxley punches him in the face. And it is sold to us as Orange Cassidy is being defiant and standing up to this bully who wants a fight. But no. No, he's going to teach this town to dance, like Footloose or something. This is what this is. This is an after-school special where it's like, I don't have to be violent to beat you. I can beat you with my hands in my pocket doing flips and kip-ups and drop kicks when everybody kind of wants to see a fight. And it's just, is this Moxley's idea? Because Moxley is supposedly in control of this program, and I can't see him pitching something like, I'm going to be the big bad bully who wants to toughen up this place, and Orange Cassidy is going to be the defiant, ironic wrestler doing ironic shtick and be the baby face in this and not get absolutely murdered death. Meanwhile, by the way, Darby Allin, who's supposedly next man up, is just... is getting eats the chicken hawk against Cesaro, or it's not Cesaro, Claudio's Foghorn Leghorn. It's like he's just getting thrown all over the place, patted on the head and said, "You're a good kid," and left. What the hell was this? Is there any reason that you could think Orange Cassidy possibly wins this?
No, Orange Cassidy doesn't win this, which begs the question, why the hell did we do this like this? What I want, especially leading into this, is 2 weeks ago, Orange Cassidy goes after Chuck Taylor backstage, you know, torments him, basically does a number of things to shatter Orange Cassidy.
Right.
And then we come back last week, and Orange Cassidy takes out Wheeler Yuta. Like, they can't find him. Wheeler Yuta's gone. And we come back this next week, Wheeler Yuta's still gone. So it's Claudio, Marina, and Moxley. Moxley and Claudio are now a little bit uneasy. They haven't seen Wheeler Yuta in a week. And then Darby's coming. You actually have Cassidy seeming to have some menace here. You know, when he was the hottest ever in this entire company's reign, that one time that Jericho accidentally strawberried him and he was bleeding. People actually want to see this cool as a cucumber guy be tough as nails and cool as a cucumber in a crisis. And that is not, I'm going to do jokey poo kicks and stick out my tongue as you beat the shit out of me. It is like, I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's cool hand stupid. Luke, and cool hand Luke wasn't letting Dragline beat the hell out of him. He was still fighting him, but he kept getting knocked out and up again.
And use your friends to even the odds. I mean, he doesn't have to use his friends to get the advantage on Moxley. He basically can, however, as the babyface, use his friends to serve as a distraction to get Moxley and him alone so that he can finally get his hands on Moxley and make it really clear that that's what he wants, rather than this, nobly I'm going to put myself in an absolutely stupid situation.
No, there were two things. Number one, okay, he told the conglomeration they couldn't come out, but what about the rest of that parking lot of nerds who got outwitted by the Death Riders?
But this is the other thing. It's just about Orange Cassidy. He's the only one who really has a problem with these guys. All these other guys' problems with the Death Riders are actually trivial. They should put these all to the side so that Orange Cassidy can vent his spleen in a 5-on-1 situation.
Oh, and then like the end of the Wheeler Yuta match, he gets the roll up, and you know, Wheeler's doing his NXT level 3 shocked face, and he's supposed to stand up, I think, and start just beating on Orange Cassidy, but he doesn't. There's that pause in there, and Bryce Remsburg's holding him back, and it looks like they're gonna do that stupid Ring of Honor handshake code of honor crap, and then eventually somebody comes in, so, and then Wheeler starts being, I go, what was that crap? It's just, they don't know the beats of their own story they're telling here, I think.
Well, and the only reason Orange Cassidy would want to have a match against Wheeler Yuta leading into this, especially if it's just going to be an honorable wrestling match, would be to try to speak to his friend about the honor of competition. But like, this is the other thing that's really dangerous about this whole storyline. Fighting is cool. It's just why to wrestle is nerd shit.
I want to have a well choreographed match.
I mean, let's keep it real, Jeff. What do you want to see? I'm going to go out there and have a very good spirited arm drag competition with you next week with Ospreay, or I am going to kick your ass. Which one of those two promos gets you more into the room? It's a no contest. I'm going to kick your ass is the banger promo, and get ready to see a picture perfect vertical suplex, the likes of which you have not seen since Mr. Nick Bockwinkle, is not going to do it.
Now, if you're going to do that, you have to say it as a Gordon Sully. It's suplex.
Oh, get ready next week to see a picture-perfect vertical suplex the way we have not seen since Mr. Nick Bockwinkle was in the ring in the mid-1980s.
Oh, good Lord. So that's all I want to talk about AEW.
Let's I really do feel this. So Orange Cassidy, this storyline's important to break down because this is what they've gone all in on.
Yes.
Their wrap around meta plot line right now is the Death Riders story. And it is connected together in a threadbare quilt. You have Darby Allin limply describing some degree of outrage about what happened to Bryan Danielson as some sort of catalyzing event. You have the Death Riders attacking everyone in the locker room and those people kind of sort of caring about this. You have some sort of appeal to your vice presidents who have been heels to turn babyface to save the company when they've been on a narcissistic tirade that is elevated to the point where they've decided that they deserve their own entry ramps. But these are supposed to be our saviors, the ones who come down from the 11th floor office, those guys. And then we have Orange Cassidy, who, what does he care about? He cares about wrestling? It's wrestling. In this amorphous sort of way. So he's just there to test his drop toe holds against the best in the world. That's not exciting stuff, and this is what the big story is. We don't even understand what Moxley's end game is.
No, we don't.
When would he be satisfied?
He needs to change this company, or some things have to change.
It's been 6 weeks. It's been 8 weeks.
What do you want out of this company?
Right.
John?
And you don't have to give me an explanation week one, but when you don't give me an explanation by week six, it tells me you don't have anything to say.
Why are you hanging out with a woman who's not your wife, John? How about you tell me that? Why is Pac now with you? What is going on? Okay.
Right. Why doesn't your wife care? At some point, why isn't anyone asking Renee, what's going on with John? Why doesn't that come up more often?
How come nobody's afraid of you?
And then where is the management figure speaking to Daddy Magic on commentary about being involved in the kidnapping
a felony
kidnapping of signed employee talent?
Yes.
It doesn't matter that Jack Perry is a douchebag. You're a commentator, Matt. Who's saying that to him? Nobody. This is AEW's stupid universe that you are dumber for having cared about. The more you think about and analyze and ask these questions about why doesn't somebody do this? Why doesn't somebody do that? You're dumber for having gotten there.
Yes.
And you know what? You think it doesn't matter, sicko. Look at the ratings. When's the last time you broke a million? It's not since Phil Brooks was in the company, and that's not an accident. So stick with this if you like these numbers.
And then you look at the other company, and sure, the bloodline's been repetitive. It's moved at a glacier pace, but they're hitting beats, and there's a loose thread throughout the entire thing with other stories going on. Like last night's SmackDown, that Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes promo battle was fantastic. Cody comes out, he's angry, he wants to talk to Kevin. Kevin's been summoned there, but blah blah blah. And then they they go through it and Kevin basically says this is all Cody's fault, which he should. And then
has a coaching case for that too.
He does, but then Cody turns it on him and says, no, this is all about your self-loathing. And how you can't see that you're already on the pinnacle of the company, et cetera, and you shouldn't have done, and you crossed a line with Randy, et cetera, et cetera. And Kevin Owens ends it like this. Well, I loved Randy Orton, and I crossed a line with him. I hate you, Cody. And it's like, oh my God, that's all you need to do is say you hate somebody, and I'm interested. I'm here for that. And then we also had the formation of the team, and my God, the people were whining on Monday. Oh, you just shoehorned the Rollins Bronson Reed feud into here, blah 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 blah. And then on Friday they throw you a bit of a curve, and it's CM Punk, who's the fifth guy with Roman and company, bringing back Paul Heyman, him being the original Paul Heyman guy. And this also can lead then to Punk and Rollins stories in addition to anything Punk Roman related or Punk bloodline related, because Punk's going to go to Rollins. They've already had their tete-a-tetes and say, I manned up when you didn't. or couldn't. And, you know, it all comes together a little bit. It's, look, it's not magical storytelling, don't get me wrong, but it's solid storytelling. And the haters are going to hate.
Dude, the last 18, 24 months, they've done things and connected dots to things that have happened 10, 12 months ago, as far back. And that's all I've been asking for WWE for pretty much the entirety of this podcast. Please tell me a story that makes the past seem relevant and coherent. And they're doing that now.
Yes.
On a reliable basis, especially with like the Cody, the cast of people around Cody, they are reliably telling coherent stories, and you can kind of see seeds get planted. You can see where the Kevin Owens thing, Cody even initially putting that title shot in front of Kevin Owens, not necessarily fully processing that maybe there are some unspoken things that they need to talk about in the first place. Like all this stuff weaves together in a way that doesn't just feel like a knee-jerk heel turn. Kevin Owens's heel turn has been months in the making and slow burning. He will not turn back from being a heel next week.
Yeah.
He will, in fact, he will probably be a heel for all of 2025, would be my suspicion.
He laid it out during this promo. He's like, look, Roman and the Bloodline screwed the greatest night of my life up. I could have been champion. They kept screwing me, and they screwed me out of this, and they screwed me out of that. And then Roman comes back, and you decide to team with him. You know, that's, you know, the loyalty stuff is, you know, fantastic. And Roman's getting his own thing with his family and whatnot. I mean, there's moving parts to this whole thing. And it was just, I watched that. I went, my God, that's a lovely sorbet to cleanse my palate from that Dynamite on Wednesday.
No, I think even the motivations are clearly stated and make sense. Owen's saying, it's all well and good for you, Cody, to say bygones are bygones, but it's like you're saying it on my behalf, too.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me, well, I can let bygones be bygones. Kevin, why can't you do that? That isn't that kind of petty.
Your turn, sir.
All right.
We've been through a lot already, so.
I know. We've been through a lot, and we've been just kind of, like, really flowing here. Let's go to the not great NXT right now. I think to give NXT some positive notes, I think NXT has made an extraordinarily impressive women's division that has a bottom, middle, and top of the card that are all like skilled and fun to watch, and people feel like they're moving up and down in kind of a coherent way. But I, like, for example, I cannot stand the Ashanti, the Adonis, and Carmen Petrovic storyline. It's bad.
I love Carmen Petrovic to death because she's interesting and she has a sword. But I can't stand this high school romance BS thing where
and Ashanti needs a new character. I don't know what this fitness trainer, personal trainer crap thing is, but it's not working.
Although I did howl at Nikita Lyons cock blocking him. It's like, yes, it's just the Ashanti the Adonis character is so god awful and creepy. I can't get past it.
Right? Like, how am I supposed to feel bad for this guy who a couple of weeks ago was basically taking the shotgun approach to dating, where I'm just going to point and fire, you know, like a submachine gun, spraying bullets in all directions, seeing if I can wing anything. And then all of a sudden, I'm supposed to be rooting for this guy.
He's a freshman at a mixer. Just right, boom, right. Boom.
I'm not. I don't. Look, to be clear, I don't even begrudge someone for shooting, especially a young man. Shoot your shot, you know, spread your seed, see what lands. But I am not rooting for you like Romeo and Juliet to overcome the odds here and find love, the Capulets and the Montagues here in the NXT locker room. And then, like, my other note from this match is Dion Lennox is a big dude. Like, that guy is, he's kind of, he reminds me a lot of Jason Jordan when you finally get him in the ring. He, like, why did we give him the Dorcas Malorcas gimmick? What is that doing for this guy?
Probably because he said something backstage or he went to college or something. Yeah, he said, like,
I like book. And someone's
like, I like to read.
I like book. Oh, we got us a reader.
We need to build you a character. What do you like to do? I like to read. Oh, well, there's a character. We'll make you Nerdy the Bookworm. Yeah. Come on over here. No, my only issue is there are like 20 Brinley Reese's in NXT and me.
Well, and that's in the names. Everyone being named Brinley or Paxley or Henley or Branley. Like, there's so many Lees in this company, either in the first name or the last name.
Somebody
name
loves their adverbs or something like that.
Yeah, you know, right.
They have to add L-Y to the end of every single name.
Jasmine Nix was almost Jasmine Nixley.
Tatum Paxley.
Yeah. Tatum Paxley, Fallon Henley, Brinley Reese. But yeah, you got to put the Lee at the end of it.
Yeah. I did enjoy the main event, though. I mean, I knew that he was going to – see, they keep saying Chase U as it exists will not exist anymore. So I'm thinking this is another way they're going to retcon this in some way. I just don't understand why. I could see them looking at Chase U as a small kind of gimmick. I could see that making money on the main roster with Chase U gear. I'm sorry. I know that. I mean, look, if the whole point is to get rid of Duke Hudson, I'm fine with it. But I think the whole point is probably to get rid of Andre Chase, who I think has over-delivered in this gimmick. I had forgotten how much he made me laugh in some of those vignettes with just his random swearing and anger issues. Because
he's so good, and I actually think he's a really good babyface fire-up, too.
Yes, he has the best babyface fire-up in this NXT roster.
He makes me feel something in the performance. I mean, like, you know, I didn't all of a sudden have it. It's still real to me, damn it. But, like, in the performance, I thought that Harlan Bravado, Arlen Chase, or Andre Chase was outstanding.
Yes.
Like, he was really, really, really good. And he... I don't get it. Like, especially as I'm watching these charisma vacuums at the top of the card here. Like, I am sorry. You had, on commentary here, doing an homage to Booker T on his way to the commentary booth in the outfit, and then doing an homage to Booker T on commentary was Trick Williams when he was asked, what do you respect or like about Chase U? And all he could do is say things like, well, they got hustle, and they're out there, and they try, and you got to have respect because you got to respect that they're out there trying because they're always hustling. This is trite crap. Ridge Holland has no personality outside of whatever he had inside of Chase U, and I'm not intrigued in the slightest in this Ridge Holland versus Trick Williams feud. They took the belt off of Ethan Page, and then even Ethan Page is ice cold. Like, the money angle right now would be Ethan Page trying to destroy Chase U. Like, all ego Ethan Page wants to not only, like, essentially he leverages Chase U where he'll own the university if Andre Chase U loses his title shot.
They thought that they were going to do that with, what's her face? The one I always joked was a porn secretary. And one, but she was like a businesswoman with like
14, Tiana James.
Tiana and James.
Fallon Henley's bar.
Yes, the land thing. No mention of Bodie Hayward on this either. But yeah, I like the gimmick. I hope they find a way to bring it back.
So did Bodie get in trouble at some point? We never heard about that.
I don't know. They just canned him.
Yeah, I know. I thought he was like one of the best Chase U students they ever had.
I don't know. Maybe something happened. I didn't hear anything
about
it, though. Your turn if you have anything.
All right. I don't get what we're doing with Ren Sinclair. Same thing where it's like, Charlie Dempsey and his little stupid faction needs to just be, that should have been ended as we know it this week on this show, because it's going nowhere. It's never gone anywhere. It's stupid.
These catch point things, they never get there, do they, in WWE? Because WWE doesn't have enough respect for amateur wrestling type of thing, grappling
I think it's cool. That's part of it. I mean, I think that this faction has the forever taint of Drew Gulak being sort of the inception point of it on it, that it's never going to be able to overcome the inertial weight of Drew Gulak creating some of the identity of this group, and then them struggling to find what is the identity of this group other than sort of Gulak Sin Gulak. It's catch point Sin Gulak, and like, that's not really all that interesting.
The answer to your question is Ren Sinclair is there to lose, but to look good doing it and to be interesting doing it. And I like her a lot, but as one of my friends said about another friend who's an actress, like, she just has a giant pumpkin for a head, and it's expressive and it's great, and but she's there to be comic relief. She's there to be the personality for this group, and that's the problem.
And then we have Kalani Jordan, who I think is actually heading to the heel turn now. Because she's now getting all bitter and everything about that she's the standout and she's not getting the opportunities to shine and stuff. And this is the secret truth of all these dirty strivers, Hawkins. Underneath them is a deep, deep sense of entitlement that they're the standout and they deserve more. Okay. And that's, they stand out because they're better, and they're better because they stand out.
I love this bit. Don't get me wrong. But I am scared shitless that Kalani Jordan will turn heel and become one of these Ridge Holland, absolutely no personality type heels.
Right. I want to be clear. I think there's a lot of money in her as the heel, as this showboat. Like, she does the cartwheels and she like is basically
Kurt Angle style.
Yes.
Stuff.
Like, why don't you appreciate how good I am at this? And then like, new people come out and she's kind of like what Roxanne Perez is doing now, but like even more disingenuous. Like, I want to make sure I'm giving a leg up to the next person, all that sort of stuff. No, this Striver stuff rubs certain people high the wrong way. Meanwhile, Tatum Paxley, how many more times are we going to give her the fake title shot before we actually give her the real title chase? Because the crowd loves her, and she's really damn good. She can go, and she would be perfect to win this title off of Fallon Henley.
I think they continually do this because weird gimmick. And it just it ticks you off, because it's like, okay, then don't give people who are then good wrestlers weird gimmicks.
Gimmicks,
you know?
Right, yeah. Like, or figure out another way then becomes, here's a challenge for the writing team. You have a good wrestler in a weird gimmick. Figure out how to make this gimmick sharper, because right, she can do the carrying of the weight. She's not a bad talker. She's not a bad performer. And she's a good wrestler. So figure out how to make this work then. Stop or walk it back and figure out something with Tatum Paxley. But like, it annoys me because I really like Tatum.
It's time for Vader Club. Chris has selected Don Fry versus Brian Johnston from New Japan Pro Wrestling, October 18th, 2000. This one was one where you made me do some research on this as to why this match was happening and whatnot. Chris,
why was this match happening and whatnot?
These two fought, and I had forgotten this, these two had actually fought legit at UFC 10.
Okay.
They are both UFC fighters. This is a feud between Team 2000, which would later become known as Black New Japan, I believe. It's an offshoot of the new NWO Japan. It was Masahiro Chono's stable. Don Fry was a part of it, and they were in a feud with Fighting Club G Eggs, which was Yuji Nagata, Manabu Nakanishi, Brian Johnson, among others. And they were having a series of events to determine who would get the matchmaking rights at Battle Final 2000. And Team 2000 won this because they had 11 wrestlers while Fighting Club GX had 4 at the time. And Brian Johnston was one of them. Now, I will now let you talk about what you love about this match.
I want to go so far as love. I wanted to watch like. Don. What?
Like, then.
Yeah, okay, look, I wanted to watch my. The way I approach this is I go, okay, what hard-hitting guy have I not watched some stuff from in a minute and would want to watch some stuff from? Mm-hmm. And Don Fry was like, I was like, I could feel some Don Fry. So I started kind of going through the Pro Fight DB. One, career shorter in wrestling, like mixed martial.
He didn't do a lot of wrestling.
He didn't do it. He didn't do a ton of it. Less than you'd think.
Because he wasn't good at it.
Yeah, well, though, he wasn't good at, like, that, right? Like, what he's good at is punching. Like, yeah, yes. Right? So, like, that was the thing, is I was going through it, and I was like, yeah, no, he's always just had this presence. I saw an interview with him recently. Like, dude's clearly received some serious CBIs. Like, man's clearly slowed down a little bit from all the headshots. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to watch a Don Fry match. So I watched a couple other ones. They weren't dazzling me. I believe this was match 3. And I was just like, you know what? We need to pick something. Looks like we're watching Brian Johnston and Don Fry this week.
Yes.
So the setup here is that Don Fry has moved from – is not in super muscular Burt Reynolds mode at this point. We're now into, like, kind of dirtbag Don Fry is how I would typify
the ponytail
this.
And everything.
Yeah. It's like the curly hair, ponytail, bald spot. We're kind of like into dirtbag Don.
Uncle's off the divorce and he just got a Pontiac Fiero.
Yeah, exactly. And he wants to look 10 years younger than he is, but he's doing all the wrong things to get there. That is how we arrived in this match. He's going up against Brian Johnston, a man who I described to Jeff has never been afraid to block a punch using all of the abilities of his face.
If you watch UFC 10, he just gets murder death by Don Fry. I mean, it was something. I'm going to tell you flat out, Chris, I didn't enjoy this, but this isn't my kind of – I don't like worked MMA. For the most part, it doesn't interest me all that much. And look, a lot of this looked like some stiff shots, and they were willing to take it from each other.
That's what I was gonna say. Is like, I mean, it's I have a weird relationship with this style of wrestling. I will say, over the last 10 years, I've come to have much more of an appreciation from it. Where, you know, before I think I had the same sort of like, oh, it's worked MMA. Now I watch these, and especially with like kind of the Vader Club eye of these dudes punching each other, there are definitely times like there's one time like Johnston like just like punches Don Fry in the face.
Yeah,
you know, like there are times where you see these
because they
dudes
don't know how to work a punch versus doing the real punch, so they're actually punching the guys in the face. Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, like, you know, I enjoy that sometimes. Sometimes like that I enjoy watching these guys not really know how to work, so they're instead just kind of beating the crap out of each other, but like holding back a smidge with an understanding that there is an outcome.
And around this time, UFC was kind of going. It was in a bit of a nadir in terms of popularity.
This is the grapple F era.
But this is also when. But this is also when Pride FC is kind of becoming that underground thing that's you know, that and Don Fry was a part of that, and you'd get like freak fights occasionally in there too. But
and that was a worked promotion. Like Pride fighting was worked.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes and sometimes not, but spectrumatically and a lot more often than not. Like Ken Shamrock's talked about this.
But Brian Johnston was a terrible MMA fighter too. So I mean, he was mid-level. I wouldn't say he's terrible. But
fearless in taking a punch to his face.
Oh, God, yes.
Guy, the man, man's never afraid to take that punch to the face. Should have learned to duck.
You can find this on the Internet Archive. I did not link it. Maybe if you want a link, go in the Discord. I'll put it in there if you request it.
The face of steel, Brian Johnson.
Yeah, because if you Google Don Frye versus Brian Johnson, you get the UFC 10 tournament.
Which... And that will also be a fine exhibition of Brian Johnson dexterously blocking punches with his face.
Yes, pretty much. I mean, this is when you wear sneakers in the octagon, as long as you didn't throw a kick and stuff. And Don Frye just has no time for this barefoot goober. And he just locks in and just starts punching the crap out of him.
As we're wrapping up, there's like just this sequence where Don Frye's got this, and like he hits Johnson, just like jabs him. Johnson doesn't even get a guard up. He just takes it right in the face and does one more, and then just like waffles down. I'm like, that wasn't working. He's just an idiot.
Pro Fight DB has his wrestling thing, and it has this thing for star ratings. He doesn't have one above one. I think he has like a 1.5 in there, but it's like 0.51. So anyways, if you're in the States, enjoy your Thanksgiving week next week. We'll be back. I'll get back Friday morning, so we'll record sometime during the weekend.
Yeah.
Enjoy Full Gear. It's about to start. The 0 hour is starting. And then next week we'll do a preview of a Survivor Series War Games, which I think is going to be very, very interesting. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow Jess the Show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. Chris is on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We have our own feed in addition to the super feed. We appreciate your patronage. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show. Wednesdays, 20 minutes after it ends, Paul Fontaine of Figure 4/Wrestling Observer and I go live on YouTube. It drops for free in your audio feeds the next morning. Chris, your turn.
I'm sorry. As you were doing all that, I've watched the sequence where Don Frye unloads the combination on Brian Johnson like 3 times, and it gets funnier and funnier. Dude, get your hands up. Follow me on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV if you want guitar lessons. I'm happy to give you
those. Get your hands up if you're going to play guitar, though, yeah.
You're going to get your hands up. You'll have better hand-eye coordination than Brian Johnson after you get some guitar lessons from me. Otherwise, you'll be playing guitar with your face. And... Kabong. All right, follow us. And remember, people, subscribe to Shake Them Ropes on your podcast feed. I was going to do that promo thing, but I forgot it.
Yeah, stuffing's better than mashed potatoes.
Stuffing.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture. And we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.